So this is actually, so this is my wife's, and it has like, so she got this at her Christmas party job. At the end of it, they were just handing them out. At the time, you know, just a few months ago, we didn't realize the depth of the mania of the Stanley Cups. So she was just like, oh, cool cup. And then once we learned of it, she got all the accessories and stuff. Like there's like she has like a handling case or whatever. It has like a little like a bookmark cap. I mean, still to me the coolest thing is like her company's her the logo though, it's her side job. But no, it's like a it's just a big ass cup. I don't know what the big deal is. So like
It's 'cause they gamified it, right? They figured out they Pokemoned it. They came out with all, you know, like Yeti comes out with like they got you got you like your silver, black, and blue Yetis, right? You know, and red. But like they gamified it by coming up with all these funky colors. They were smart enough to do all these limited editions. And when you hear limited edition, people go insane. And they marketed it directly to mommy YouTubers and mommy bloggers and that audience. And they are massive trend drivers. It is insane how much they drive trends.
There's like as many customizations as there was like would be for like a handgun. Like you instead of like getting scopes and like trigger guards and stuff, there's like a rim guards and straw caps. This is crazy. This is like John Wick for ladies, I guess. I don't know. She even has a little
John Wick
charm
for
there.
ladies. You
Yeah,
know
this is
what?
but yeah, okay.
I would pay good money to see Ana de Armas kill somebody with a Stanley mug in the ballerina.
Oh my God. I really give this back to her because she kills me.
Yeah, my daughter, I was like, oh, you got two. Can I use one? And she's like, you can't have a Stanley. It's for teenage girls. So I was like, oh, that branding is very strange.
Well, there was I saw somebody on Twitter right around the holidays posted because you know I actually have a bunch of Stanley stuff like because Stanley makes good thermoses. They've been around for 100 fucking years, like but some lady posted that she asked her husband for a Stanley mug and he got her one of the old school like military looking ones and she was super pissed off about it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's episode of Action for Everyone for this here February 18th, 2024. I am, as always, your host, Mike Scott. A little discombobulated this morning because I overslept, but then turned out I didn't oversleep and it was a whole big thing. But I am here, as always, joined by Vice Victus. Vice, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Just want to give a belated happy Valentine's Day to all who did or did not celebrate. Have a bunch of lonely hearts up there too. But no, I just hope you had have a good weekend, having a good month so far. We still got things in motion, so a short month, but we got a lot of stuff going on. So we'll get to this. Like things planned for certain episodes, which are still in motion. So yeah, a lot going on, but just happy to be here. Good to see you guys again. We have a man back too, so yeah, here we
Speaking of which, wearing his UI's team shirt, sleeveless, of course, Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you today, buddy?
I'm good, guys. It's great to be back. I do want to thank Brandon for, as always, being our Steve Martin sort of on deck co-host. Last week's episode was great. I really enjoyed listening to Chad, who seems to have the healthiest disposition of anyone in the industry I've ever heard. That was a really fun episode. And soccer is a little later today, so I'm able to be here with you guys, and I couldn't be happier.
Now, as we discussed on the Discord, are you going to start by making the team shout, "Come on, you apes, you want to live forever?"
So I'm not the coach of this team. This is like, this is a traveling team that she's kind of got called in to do a tryout for. So this is something Ruby's been working for 2 years since this team got started.
This, this is like a big, big deal.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Because it's not a club team that you have to pay for, which I mean, we could go into the whole thing, but the club teams are quite expensive. This is one that a local guy is pretty much, he's putting in all the work and he's doing it just for his own daughter's team. So it's like, this would be huge if she makes it. And it's a couple week long tryout. So excited.
Wow. Well, yeah. a big hearty A4E good luck to Ruby.
Thank you.
And you did mention it, Liam. I just want to shout out again last week. Thank you, Chad. Chad Michael Collins was just an absolute delight to talk to. And it's been fun seeing our mentions with the Chad army basically mobilizing. He's got his own like dedicated fan base. It's very cool.
The human personification of Chad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Like we were talking about this, you know, on Twitter or over DMs that he's literally the dictionary definition of dude's rock. Like just, he is just straight up dude's rock dude. Like loved him. It was a great episode.
He does mention gratitude a lot. And anytime I've ever felt shitty about anything in life, it's like that's always my center to go back to. So it is, you know, we're talking about demeanors and mindsets, and it's like just filling your cup with gratitude. It really is the right way to look at things.
Yeah. Well, it's just really cool to see that such a humility on display. You know, it's a pretty big star in my view, I think. You know, I think he's up there with Atkins, and then like, as far as like the DTV kings, you know, he's one of the DTV royalty, but you know, and then even the fact that he takes that label with honor, I think that was really cool to see. No, yeah, and also just like, you know, like I've been saying before, just the, I always say it and always mean it. It really is a privilege to have all the guests we have on, you know, who share their experience and their, you know, about in the industry, just as people, like just cool dudes that we would talk to. So yeah, I really I do wish you could have been there. Though. I feel like the Chad energy would have been like maximized tenfold of you together.
Liam wasn't looking for that smoke. He wanted none of that.
No. And I still haven't gotten to watch the movies yet. So I felt like I would have just been a tourist. So I still have my homework to do.
One other administrative thing really quick, as everybody knows, because we won't shut up about it. Good friend of the show, Janine Pipe, is working on a short film, Charlie Foxtrot. Liam O'Donnell is now one of the executive producers on said short.
I just had to show you up, Mike. I had to come in there and push you out of the producer role. It was all... No, she did tell me about your generous donation, which I know you would never talk about, but I was impressed, and I thought that was really cool of you.
I appreciate it. Let you know, I have recently come into some funds due to some horrible tragedy, and I figured I should do something good with them, and supporting Janine seems like a very good thing to do. So yes, I won't get into the details, but I am also a producer on the movie. I am Liam's the exec. He's going to make everything happen. I'm just sitting back and waiting for the dollar bills to roll in on this independent short film.
Yeah, no. I you know, she reached out and then we did a Zoom, and I read the script, and it's sort of like, you know, she's whatever help I can, which was kind of just like, hey, you know, you just being a part of this helps me. And I said, well, okay, great. So yeah, so far, so good. Excited to be a part of that team with you.
Yep. She's running an Indiegogo. She was initially running a Ko-Fi, but it didn't take off quite as well because Ko-Fi is not the best for fundraising. So she shifted it over to Indiegogo, much easier, much better platform. So make sure to follow her on Twitter or follow us, and you can donate to that and help make that a reality. It's going to be very cool. And for people that don't know, it's they're using the short as a springboard to make a feature film. So hopefully bigger and better things will come from it. So all right, I think that's all the administrative stuff. Let's get into some movies. It's going to be a good old-fashioned A4E this week. We're just going to talk some fucking movies, which is pretty impressive that we've got as many movies to talk about, because February has been a fucking wasteland, man. Like January was such an embarrassment of riches, and February has just, we really need to shift our mentality. February is the dump month now. It's no longer January. It's now February is the dump month. But speaking of wastelands, we're going to go to Vice first, because you're the only one that saw the movie that has set Dakota Johnson over the edge. You went and saw Madam Web. Tell us about it, Vice.
Yeah. So right afterwards, I was like, I thought to myself, you know, just another kind of a waste of time. Like, it wasn't really enough to be mad about. It was, you know, so a lot of these, like, when they come at these comic movies, like, with this, like, business first mindset that you can kind of feel on the screen, it's kind of like, well, whatever, that's nothing. But then as I thought about it over the weekend, I did feel genuinely disappointed. Insofar as, like, I think there was, like, a, they had the material here, and there was, like, a, there would have been a good reason to make a, like, YA young woman focused, like, fun superhero film, like a teen film, like, you know, focused for, like, a female slash teen audience. And I think that might have been the idea in the first place of this movie. I'm not quite sure, you know. But, you know, and then thinking about, like, how, like, Iman Vellani and as Ms. Marvel in the MCU, how she's been very well received. So I feel like that was probably a part of the idea, at least, with this movie. And there's definitely the material is there. But yeah, just so like it just doesn't come together at all. But then, like, thinking about that aspect of it, it was kind of like, man, this really was a missed opportunity. But overall, it's kind of nothing much really to say about it, other than it's a boring ass movie that kind of looks not good. And I don't know if it's like a I don't know if it's genuine disdain for the project, or if it's like some kind of like weird negging campaign on Dakota Johnson's part. But I don't feel like she earns this dismissiveness of the movie when she's the worst thing about it. Like she's not even a good enough actress to like act like she gives a fuck. Like, she's terrible in this fucking movie, and it's like, I don't know, like, why she feels so above it all. I mean, maybe it's the whole nipple baby thing. I don't even want to like get into like the whole like Hollywood, like that part of it, or the gossipy part of it. It's just like, this is a whack movie, and it's like, I guess it's good to know that you're in a whack movie, but like, don't act above it. You signed the contract, bitch. Like, you get the money for the movie. Like, don't act like you're above this shit. Especially because, like I said, on the flip side, the younger Isabel Merced, Sydney Sweeney, like the three actresses who are in the movie, like as the younger Spider-Woman or whatever the fuck, they're actually good. They give a fuck, and it's like it should have been their movie, and that's again like that's where that kind of that disappointment comes in. It's like there was stuff work here that there was material here to make this, you know, worthwhile. Celeste O'Connor is the third person, as that's the third the triumvirate of three characters, and there was something here. But it's just kind of like wasted with her like blasé, like bland affect of like, you know, I just want to be a superhero, I guess. It's just her flat delivery. It's like, I don't know. It's there's like, and also I guess there's other conversations that I'm not quite as well equipped about, like discerning between like camp and schlock. You know, like there's ways you can read this movie as like a kind of a campy thing. But again, it's like, I don't think it works in that regard either, because there's no like kind of passion in it. It just kind of feels all stitched together. So yeah, I didn't really want to like, there's no reason like dunk on it. First of all, I don't really do that. Well, I try not to do that as a reviewer or as a journalist, but yeah, I have no reason to like dunk on it for like internet points. Just more than I'm kind of really, it's really just kind of bummed out about it all at the end of the day. Like, there's no fun in trying to like make fun of it, but also there's no fun in like seeing the waste of potential. So, like, I don't know. It's kind of funny actually. Well, we're talking about like the dregs of February, because we actually didn't talk about this, I think, too much actually. Argyle came out, you know, previously the past week, and that one has some choices, capital C choices. And you know, like, and I think it also has been similarly like poorly received, but
it fucking bombed, is what you mean. I mean, it fucking it was a $200 million movie, and it made a ham sandwich back. That's what you're talking about.
But you know what? At least I could tell there was some passion put into that whack ass sandwich. Like, it has like drive and verve. You know, Matt Vaughn is like a crazy motherfucker. Like he's a genuine, like, you know, weirdo.
It's
a
twisted mind.
Yeah. So like, even though like it's like, you know, one could say it's terrible, which I was kind of mixed on it. Like there's a few scenes, or a few actual scenes of, you know, sequences that are like, oh shit, this is like actually like a inventive. This is inspired.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that his movies always have that. And even the Kingsman, the second one that I think everyone agrees is the worst one, there's still like sequences in it that you're like, wow, that was pretty intense and smartly thought out. And yeah. I believe it was like Brad Allen, or at least his guys that were doing the fights. Like, they're no slouches.
Yeah, it was Brad Allen.
So there's always something to be had with his movies. I wouldn't ever completely dismiss him. That haircut in Argyle, is I can't get over it.
The best way to sort of describe Matthew Vaughn is Matthew Vaughn, the director, is insanely talented and very good. Matthew Vaughn, the writer, is a juvenile, immature hack, basically. And so that's the problem, is the director's always let down by the writer in Matthew Vaughn's movies, but his directing talent is unmistakable. That being said, S.J. Clarkson's also a good director, so I don't know, but she also doesn't have the juice that Matthew Vaughn has, so I get that she probably doesn't have the pull to make Madame Web actually a good movie.
And that's the thing, like I'm talking shit about Dakota Johnson, because, like, you know, one, she could take it. She's putting herself out there in this press tour, but, you know, she's a superstar. You know, her family's famous. Like, she could take it. And of course, she doesn't care. She's making the money either way. So, but I don't want to, like, more of a thing is, like, I want to put the blame on the director or like the crew involved with Madame Web, because, like, you know, I don't know. It's just that it's kind of it's too bad, you know, it didn't live up to its potential. But, you know, who's to say whose fault that really is? I mean, you could definitely feel it's more of like a, I don't know, the formula. MCU found the formula and kept doing it for a reason. Like, this stuff is harder than it looks. Like, it's probably what people think. So, you know, it's very easy for this stuff to fail, and I guess that's kind of what happens here. So, you know, it's
Vern had an absolutely brilliant tweet this weekend, where he tweeted about the new Marvel Blade, and he said, I keep seeing people saying, you know, about the new Marvel Blade not getting off the ground. Like, it's a vampire hunter with a sword. You know, how hard can it be? And Vern goes, it's actually really fucking hard. Otherwise, all movies would be as good as Blade. It's like, yeah, that's actually true. Like, this shit is hard. And I think we're so oversaturated with Marvel shit now that we forget, you know, going back, what a real miracle that first very long run of Marvel stuff was. And you know, and the other thing I would say is, I think Sony maybe has taken the wrong lessons from Venom, which is trying to do these sort of, make these movies these sort of campy things, when the reality is both Venom movies are absolutely terrible. They just have Tom Hardy doing next level shit in them. Yeah. And that makes them enjoyable. But if you put, I don't know, you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson or somebody in there instead of Tom Hardy, and not slagging on Aaron Taylor Johnson, he just isn't the level of crazy that Tom Hardy is. If you put him in there, those movies are not going to work, which is why I don't really have real high hopes for Kraven, right? You know, so you can't replicate Tom Hardy. I mean, if there's one rule in Hollywood, I think we should all follow, it's that you can't replicate Tom Hardy.
And it's actually kind of, I guess, ironic, because, like, you know, Dakota Johnson is known for being this kind of chaotic personality, celebrity personality in the real world. But to me, it doesn't translate at all to the character or the movie she plays in. Like that would have been actually a better idea. Like, you know, if you can get like a quote unquote wild crazy actress, like, just kind of go off the rails with this stuff. But, you know, like, it can be boring, like, you know, empty rote dialogue. But if somebody was actually like committed to like going off with it, it would have been worthwhile. But she's just like, you know, because I'm here to see the lines now. Ben Parker. Spider-Man interwoven cameo. Like, is this a fucking don't waste my fucking time because you waste your time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not my fucking problem. It's your fucking bullshit movie.
Still cost me $11 to see the damn thing.
No fucking money back, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the thing. It has been weird seeing some of the people on Twitter that have just leapt to its defense because they must defend all things Marvel, even if it's not MCU related. But sometimes movies are just not good, and this sounds like one. I agree with you about Dakota Johnson. She's actually quite a restrained actress. She's kind of like, but you know, I will say I thought she was really great in Peanut Butter Falcon. I thought she was spectacular in Suspiria. You know, and so, but this doesn't sound, she sounds like somebody that I feel like there's this certain group of actors in Hollywood who they almost get driven into these big blockbuster movies because their agents and everybody's telling them, you know, you make this movie, you don't have to like make a for them project again. You could retire right now so you can make, you know, it's like what George Clooney said about Batman. Basically, that's why he took that, is his money guy said, look, George, if you take this movie, you'll never have to work a day again as long as you live. And so he took it so that he could then make Out of Sight and all the things that he likes. But at least say what you will about Clooney, he gave his all in Batman and Robin. Whether you like that movie or not, he was there. He was committed to that movie. There is this group of actors that feels like they're almost like angry and embarrassed that they're in these movies, and it shows in their performances. And it's kind of like, I get it, but... Yeah, like you said, don't take the movie if that's the case. You know.
Well, here, and so I want to like.
I just want to say one thing about this because I feel pretty strongly about it as well. Is that? But I think I understand we're at a crossroads where everyone wants everyone to be their authentic self. This would be something that I would have trouble with if I was in a movie and I didn't think it was great, and I still have to come out and sell it because I'm out so much on this podcast, on Discord, and I'm like being myself. So you want to be your authentic self, but I still feel like promoting your movie and is like you said, that is actually part of the contract. It's not, this is not just like vague language. It's in the contract for the money you sign about how much promotion that you have to do for it in the days and everything that's bought. So yeah, I do think it was kind of a lame press tour, to be honest with you. And I did feel like it was sort of like, look, I haven't seen the Suspiria or Peanut Butter Falcon, but I don't know. I thought it was a big turnoff, to be honest.
So something I want to add, this is this is the part where I get trouble for being a creepy old man, but actually it's pretty important. So I think this is important thing to like talk about. So like, you know, the younger cast, so Isabella Merced, Sydney Sweeney, Cecil O'Connor, like 20 somethings actresses. They're playing teenagers in the movie. And so like the marketing for this movie has been really strange. Aside from just the press tour of her, like, you know, being like blasé about it, it's like I don't know. It's like they couldn't decide if this was going to be like targeted toward young women or just like kind of more feminine energy, or if it's going to be like a fucking like what are the kids say now? Gooner bait. They couldn't decide if they wanted to like focus in on like they're being like pretty girls because like I just said, that would be creepy. And like, you know, but like that's part of why like that I think is not really, if you see that there's parts of the movie where you see them in like full costume, full like superhero regalia, you know, skin like these like body costumes, right? So like there's this weird like this double-edged sword where like they look great, like these are like pretty like attractive young women, they look great, but they also they can act. These are actually like they're actually talented actresses. So like I guess they were like kind of caught in this, like how do they mark this, like, you know, like, because do they want to do like the female empowerment stuff? Do they want to like, or does, like, you know, do they want to focus on the sex appeal? I guess they didn't know which one to go for, so they kind of do neither. So they just kind of, they don't have anything to do. But yeah, like as far as, like I said, my biggest takeaway is that if they do somehow, for some reason, could do a part two or continue this series with their whatever Sony universe they got going on, this is the strongest part about it. Is those three cast members, like especially when I was Sydney Sweeney, you know, she's kind of famous on the internet and just in general, like for being like a hot blonde girl with big boobs, but like she's definitely that, but she is actually legit talented.
Yeah, like, she's great. She's actually, yeah. She's actually the one that they kind of need to worry about, because she's the one that I think could argue probably doesn't need this movie at all.
Definitely.
I mean, Anyone But You was a big enough hit that they re-released a special edition for Valentine's Day, you know? So like she's riding high on her own. She definitely does not need this movie the way that, you know, somebody else might. So yeah. And yeah, my understanding is too, you know, as you know, I'm a Spider-Man nerd, so I know all the spider women and girls. And my understanding is they're not even, like, the only time they even show up in costume in the movie is Dakota Johnson. Spoiler, I guess, for fucking Madam Web. Dakota Johnson has, like, a vision of them in costumes. And they've leaned on that heavily in the marketing. But it's, like, a scene. It's, like, one scene in the entire fucking movie.
Oh, yeah. So the main spoiler that, you know, because the whole premise of Madam Web is she can see the future, sees visions of the future. The entire movie is basically it's an origin story, yes, but it's not even that. It's like a good friend, Sidon Adlaka, you know, great film journalist, he put it best in a tweet. He said, there's a meme that I made a few years ago about somebody said, if there was a show called Surf Dracula back in the old days, like you'd have a TV show of Dracula surfing every episode. Nowadays, it's like you have to wait till the season finale to see Dracula even get a surfboard. This is that movie form. It's a whole like prequel. The entire movie is a prologue for for this superhero team or the superhero like entity. Like it's all this, but like done in the most poorly conceived origin story I could think of. Like it's not even. It's almost like incidental that it's like, oh, this happens to be a superhero origin story. It's just such a weird, empty kind of way to begin a franchise, I guess, which I think they're trying to do. So yeah, most of the superhero stuff is like in foreshadowed. There's no actual like superheroics to like the very very end. The final act is kind of messy and kind of hard to see. But yeah, it was just a strange all around constructed superhero movie.
That's just a weird. You know, you think about, again, in my opinion, the holy grail of these movies, which is Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. We have full, I mean, that movie takes its time to give us Spider-Man, but we still have full Spider-Man an hour into that movie, you know, and then you have an hour of Spider-Man action. He's not just Spider-Man at the very end of, it's not like, you know, like kind of to go to Sidan's point that we have to watch three fucking Tom Holland movies to finally get proper Spider-Man in those movies. I think it's fair to say that that we can probably move on. We had a couple other things just for folks listening, because I like to let people behind the curtain. Liam had to dip for a sec. We did have some other things we wanted to talk about surrounding Madam Web, but we'll come back to those when Liam's back in. So Vice, I think this is a good time, since Liam hasn't seen it, it's a good time for us to talk about Land of Bad.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. February being like this wasteland, this should have been a January movie insofar as this is fucking dope. This is like this past month of January films, you know, like Beekeeper and such and Noryang, Farang, like quality action-packed movies, and this Land of Bad is straight up front. This is a great action-based war film, like top, like really high-level stuff. And it kind of like hasn't gotten any really press or I haven't seen much advertising for it at all. So it's kind of coming released out of nowhere, really, unfortunately, which is even stranger because it's a pretty sizable or pretty notable cast. You know, one of the Hemsworth brothers, but Russell Crowe's in this. My Love with the Big League, like it's pretty some good strong names here. But yeah, this is just a high level, highly proficient tactical war drama. And I wasn't expecting after last year, you know, with the combination of Covenant and Kandahar, some really high level and thoughtful war films that delivered on both, you know, the drama and the action and any kind of, you know, the more deeper introspection of war. So I wasn't expecting something else so early this year to kind of come and like be on a similar level like that. It doesn't, I'll just say that up front, like this doesn't, Lanabet doesn't have much in the way of a deeper introspection about, the global war on terror, or not much really to say about the harsher realities of war, other than, war is hell, which you see that in the combat. But no, it's very straightforward, kind of as you mentioned before, a classical sense or a classic traditional action war film. And yeah, it's on that front, it delivers like quite handsomely. I was really impressed by this.
Yeah, I was pretty blown away by this one. I had seen William Eubanks' previous movie Underwater and absolutely loved it. It's Kristen Stewart fighting Cthulhu under at the bottom of the ocean. You can't beat, I guess, spoilers again for Underwater, a fucking 5-year-old movie that came out in the pandemic. If you didn't watch Underwater during the pandemic, you probably ain't gonna get around to watching it. But he's a very talented. And I don't want to say old-fashioned in a negative way, because he has a very modern sensibility. The cinematography in both Underwater and Land of Bad is brilliant. It's absolutely just gorgeous. But he is very old-fashioned in that he makes classical movies. Underwater is a classical monster creature feature. Land of Bad is a classical war adventure. This, like I said on Twitter, this isn't a movie, like you said, Vice. This isn't really concerned with deeper, it's not like Kandahar or Covenant, where it's concerned with deeper implications of the global war on terror and America's role in it, and what do soldiers mean to the countries that they invade, and and stuff like that. This isn't that. This is a good old-fashioned men on a mission gets fucky movie. Like I compared it to, if people have never seen it, there's a great Gene Hackman, Danny Glover movie called Bat 21, where Gene Hackman gets trapped behind enemy lines in Vietnam, and Danny Glover is a pilot who has to help guide him out. Very similar to what Russell Crowe and Liam Hemsworth do in this. And it's a good old-fashioned vibe. But it's old-fashioned with such a modern technical skill, and some just insanely heavy-hitting acting performances. You pointed out Milo Ventimiglia, who is turning into Johnny Strong. I kept watching him this whole movie, and I'm like, holy shit, he looks just like Johnny Strong, and he's basically playing the Johnny Strong role.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him. He was like, he's so adept at what kind of joke all the place here, but just he's so adept at that demeanor, the look of an operator. Like, and I'm not trying to like brag or whatever. It's not, I'm not just saying that, but like, having met some real life, special forces dudes, like, he has that demeanor. Like, so hard to explain. Like, the best ones, the better ones, like, they know that they're the shit, but like, they don't brag about it because they have nothing to prove to you. So you just, they're usually pretty easygoing when it's like downtime or when you're prepping up. And then when the things get hot, they take care of business. But like a real operator, like they usually call themselves the quiet professionals. I know a lot of days, a lot of these SEALs are selling the fucking books on Fox News, so that quiet professional stuff can go out the window. But for the most part, ideally, they kind of just have a very staid, calm demeanor because they know they can do it. But they still talk shit every now and then, and he gets that down to a fucking T. It's perfect. He feels just like that same energy. He gets so well, like the calmness and the being in control, but also be ready to go off when it's time to go off. The intensity can ramp up in an instant, and he gets that so well. And plus, like, he looks fucking shredded. Like, I didn't know he was like, I've seen him in like his drama stuff. Like, I didn't never thought to realize he'd be like a cut, swole, like svelte, like iron body dude. But yeah, he's got it, man. Shit.
Yeah, he's douchebag Jess from Gilmore Girls, or he's fucking Rocky's kid in Rocky Balboa, But yeah, no, he's shredded in this. I've always actually liked Milo Ventimiglia. He's always been a pretty likable actor for me, despite some very dodgy things in his personal life. Don't look up him and Hayden Panettiere. Let's just say that.
Oh man.
Um,
oh wait, so
but
here,
wait, wait, Creed 4, you're saying Creed 4? He fights Creed. Let's do it.
I want Oh, well, here, you mentioned the modernists. So I do want to go into details of this, because the specifics of what the characters in the movie, what they're doing, because the main thing is that this another great feature of this film is that it's very authentic to the modern systems and the structure of military and how it works. So there, the movie is they're like a Southeast Asia, doing a highly sensitive special forces op to obtain a to rescue. They're gonna rescue a high level asset, and in the course of that, they encounter these high level terrorist targets. So they kind of decide we're gonna try to take out the targets and also get our asset back. And of course, as you said, the mission goes awry, things get fucked, and they have to deal with getting out of the hot zone, or you're trying to escape just with the lives. So you know, there's this element of like a sea or evasion or evasion, and you know, so the main character, this is a Liam, right? This is Liam Hemsworth. There's two Hemsworths in the movie, so I didn't know there was two of them. So yeah, he plays a JTAC. So a JTAC, it's a very unique position in the military. It's an Air Force personnel who is assigned to ground forces directly with them. And so JTAC stands for Joint Terminal Attack Controller. They basically, their job is to call in airstrikes. They have a direct link with the various air assets in theater through their various communication devices. And them having the literal eyes on the ground with the ground forces, they can call in, you know, pretty accurate airstrikes that otherwise would normally be too dangerous to do. So with that though, it is a part of the joke in the movie that you'll hear when they say it, they call them Air Force because, of course, Air Force guys aren't known to be ground troops. That's not literally not their job, except for the JTACs. The JTACs are one of the few Air Force personnel who are directly involved in ground warfare operations, you know, getting into firefights. So it's a pretty unique position to be in. It's kind of revered, but also, again, like, the dynamics is really well done in the movie because these guys are their Delta Force, the top, you know, top tier Army Special Forces. So they're making fun of the Air Force guy because he's the Air Force, but they know, they understand that what he can bring to the table is integral to their combat power. So it's just kind of a pretty distinct kind of a begrudging or like a sardonic respect for the JTACs. You know, they still cheer for us, but they get the shit done. So
again, minor spoiler, but I love the line when they're flying in on the mission and Ricky Whittle's telling Liam Hemsworth to check his gun and he starts checking all his tech equipment and he's like, no, your actual gun. And so Liam checks it, but then he goes, look, guys, you know what I do. If I have to start shooting, we got big fucking problems.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, so that's part of it. So then as we go, well, I don't know how well. Yeah, I don't think we'll do spoilers here, but it is part of the trailers and part of what you see. The reason it goes well, there's different phases of it. There is a point where people get captured. There's a point where they have to escape. There's a point where they have to kind of rearrange the airstrikes and how they're doing this stuff. So the other part of this though is Russell Crowe, his character, Captain Reaper, as his call sign. He's the surly old UAV pilot, drone pilot. They call them UAVs. That's their military nomenclature, UAVs, unmanned aircraft vehicles. He's a pilot. He's over on the other side of the world, back here in the States, in Vegas, and what's supposed to be a Creech Air Force Base. It's a gigantic Air Force Base that has all the, more technicalities. The drone vehicles themselves, UAVs, they're all throughout theater, whichever theater they may be. Can I even say this? Yeah, I can say this. They're kind of piloted two different ways. There's like a local pilot, and then once there's like basically the remote control can extend all the way back to here. So
I was gonna say good kill exists. You can say that they pilot it from
So that's kind of the the strange dehumanizing dynamic of modern warfare. If you have people literally here at home in the States in Vegas, they'll be murdering people 1,000 miles away through hellfire strikes, and then when their shift is done, they leave and go home and then have a barbecue. Like that's part of the strange reality of modern warfare. So in this, the way it's kind of displayed here though is that here in this Air Force base, Reaper, Russell Crowe, he's over the hill. He's kind of a loser. He's a he says in the movie, he's old enough that he should have been a general, but he's still a captain. That kind of implies that he runs his mouth or he has a bad position. But he's still down for the fight. He's still down to do his job for the people on the ground. It's just that he doesn't deal with authority well. So and he's played it so well. He's like so cranky as fuck. It's great. But meanwhile though, so the whole kind of dynamic is while the special forces guys and the JTAC have this like a super intense, like life or death, crazy ass fucking mission, in you know, in Southeast Asia, the Air Force crew, in the headquarters, they're watching a college basketball game. That's the whole B plot. They're watching a basketball game while these guys are over on the side dying, and Crow's character, he's like, "What the fuck are you guys doing? Like, snap out of it and like let's get our head in the game." But like, this is part of the detachment and dehumanization of the Modern Warfare, that we can like, we have these technicians, the Air Force guys in this case, who are controlling and manning this whole apparatus of death from above, but they're doing it while, you know, watching fucking sports and shit like that. And I gotta tell you, this is so fucking authentic. This is like, I swear to God, like whoever wrote this, like, must have some really good insight to how this works. Because, and then like we just said, like, this movie isn't really about the deeper meanings behind the war, but just this real detail alone says quite a lot, actually. I remember the only time I ever watched Super Bowl was in Iraq, during before the Saudi Arabia uprising. I was in Iraq during the Super Bowl where who was it? Paxco caught the it was the 15-1 when the Giants beat the New England.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. So, but I was watching
Patriot Kryptonite, Eli Manning. The only weakness Tom Brady ever had, Eli Manning.
Tom Brady got the lead of that game in the last 2 minutes. That was the defense's fault.
So yeah, so I was in Iraq, so I watched the whole season of football through that. During that time, you know, we were Super Bowl. We were watching the Super Bowl while they were doing an actual like air assault raid in Baghdad, and so like on one screen is like the fucking UAV footage, on another screen is the raid camera. It's a different type of surveillance asset, and then we have, you know, our board of traffic for, you know, the helicopters and stuff supporting the mission, and then meanwhile, fucking game is on over there. So remember that part where he gets the football like in his helmet or whatever, and you know we're in the talk, the headquarters going, yeah, and the fucking the F3, the ops commander, he's like, shut the fuck up over there, like what are you gonna do it, like we're in the middle of a fucking mission, but we watch the fucking football game, and then that detail is so fucking real, like just this kind of disconnect, and even in the movie you see the commander of the base, the Air Force commander. He's wearing like the Tennessee hat. This is the team playing. He's wearing the hat, you know, while he's in uniform, you know, watching the game, and that little detail, like, because you know, a lot of how do I say this? Oh, actually, Russell Crowe said the best in the movie. He's talking to the JTAC or the radio. He says, it's just some shit goes wrong with his plan, but he survives. And then Crowe says, well, that's a lesson for you. Don't trust the Air Force captain, because more often than not, they're full of shit. And like, whoever wrote this has a pretty distinct, keen understanding of the hierarchy of the military. Because yeah, officers are full of shit. I said, he got that so well, and you see that in the dynamic between Crow and the commander, and within, and every drone has two operators: there's the pilot and the sensor pilot. And usually, and in this movie, he has a young woman, young airman. Senior airman, who's his partner on the drone side of things, and you know, she's very, you know, professional, level headed, and you know, gets the job done. Whereas you're the Yahoo's are partying, watching the game. So yeah, there's a really well thought out and authentic dynamic on display between the ground force action element of the movie and this support echelons above God level part of the movie, and how these two things interact and interconnect, and and when things go wrong, how and why that happens, because there's literal disconnect between the ground forces and the powers that be. Like there's even a scene, again, I'm trying to voice spoiler, but this is a pretty intense scene of when the soldiers are trying to evade, and the scene is intercut between scenes of Russell Crowe in a Wegmans trying to shop for like artisanal cheese. And like, you know, this guy getting beat the fuck up and then beat up like, you know, with hammers and shit. And then flips over to, do you have, what is this, a soy organic sheet? Like, he's like, it's just a perfect microcosm of this disconnect that we have, you know. And it's, yeah, again, it's a little detail that I don't know if people will pick up on, but like, it's really authentic. It really speaks. It really gets that feeling of again, this disconnection between what we're doing, the killing of other human beings that we're doing in the apparatus of war, and then our attitude towards it, and how we go through with it, just kind of with this kind of not even thinking about it. And that's part of the arc, I guess you could say, of the main character, of the heavy character. Like, he's like he's all about, you know, death from above, whatever. But then it's like, you know, sometimes you're still doing death. And he kind of like has to face it. He has to like literally come face to face with it, you know, by the end of the movie. So yeah, again, like, my point is, all being said, it's a very straightforward film, but a lot of these little details to it that are really well researched and really well thought out, that make it, put it above just some any old plain old like shoot 'em up movie. There's really like some texture to this. Yeah.
Texture, I like that. That's the best way I think to describe it. Is there's a lot of texture in the movie, and of course, a lot of that texture is from Crow as well. You know, he bumps up, I think, into almost being in a different movie, because as Russell Crowe does, he tends to go big all the time. But I don't know whether it's him or it's Eubank. They pull him back every time it feels like that. And quite frankly, the rest of the movie, the men on the ground parts of the movie are so fucking intense that cutting back to a kind of larger than life Russell Crowe performance is actually, I think, a really nice bit of tension relief, and almost just, it's welcome. The only other thing I'm going to add, because I think you said it all, Vice, is I want to take a sec to talk about Liam Hemsworth here. You know, this has been a pretty fascinating career thus far for him. He comes out of the gate pretty hot, starring in the Hunger Games movies. You know, is really on a big upward swing. He's only got one real problem, which is he isn't Chris. And then, you know, he kind of gets Affleck'd by dating Miley Cyrus and becoming tabloid fodder and stuff for years. And it sort of feels like, you know, his career gets a little bit derailed from that movie star track. This, in my opinion, puts him right back on the movie star. This is a fucking movie star performance from him. This is
Yeah.
so good. The only complaint I had about it, and it's such a, I have two complaints about the movie. One, he's still Liam Hemsworth, so there's scenes where he's supposed to be, where he's all gritty and bloody and grimy and looking exhausted and stuff, and he's still one of the most fucking beautiful human beings on the face of the
Yeah.
earth. Like, I'm like, you can't dirty up those Hemsworth eyes. Like, it's just, so I'm just sitting there staring at him, and I'm still thinking, yeah, I still would. But also, the other complaint that I have, and this is just personal, and anybody living in Vegas is gonna know this. This was filmed in Queensland, Australia, not Las Vegas. Nellis Air Force Base is nowhere near where they have Nellis Air Force Base in the movie. You cannot see the strip from Nellis the way that you can in the movie. It's very clearly some, you know, digital composition. Just let's throw some Vegas skylines in there. It made me twitch a little bit, but that's, you know, I mean, that's a thing that just happens in movies, right? It's fine. You gotta, not everybody's been to Vegas. You gotta establish the geography. Like, if you set a movie in Nellis
It's
and
desert. It's just
it was
dirt over there,
yeah it
isn't
was
it?
actually in Nellis, you'd have no way of knowing it was even in fucking Nevada.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, there's
That's a good point. They balance the poetic license of being a movie with these real details. Like, you know, that the way the strip is set up might not be real in the way the actual Air Force Base is, but inside the scenes inside of it, inside the talk, like, that is a real fucking talk. Like, I don't know, again, whoever got the production design notes, whatever. Like, there's a part where in the beginning where he's trying to get his coffee, like, somebody like stash all his like creamers and stuff, and you see him in the break room like putting it back together. And I've had that experience so many fucking times. I cannot tell you, like, because back when I was you know, I was in a well, can I say this? Yeah, I'm getting so many flashbacks from this movie. It's kind of great, actually. With the Air Force for a while, for a year, in Qatar. They have a huge, gigantic Air Force base there, and it has this, like, and that's the other thing. Air Force is known for, they have all the money from these armed forces. Like, army guys, we get shit barracks, we get shit food. They have, like, and their stuff compared to ours is a palace. So they have, like, all these really great amenities, like, you know, the Keurig machines and stuff, and the coffee rooms. And you see him, like, you see him being so pissed that his coffee setup is taken out of whack. But that's because these guys are doing, like, 12-hour, 18-hour shifts. They need that fucking, that jolt, the caffeine, like, the constant pump, you know, like, yeah. So just, like, again, little details like that were, and that same goes for the action and the Delta Force guys. Like, they do kind of, like, you know, macho it up a little bit for being movie. But at the same time, some of their lingo, some of their movements, they are kind of well researched and real enough, authentic enough that it comes through.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I actually had to keep explaining to Kelsey. We had to keep pausing it because she had to keep being like, wait, what's that mean? You know, because, like, there was stuff like, you know, there were RTB and stuff like that. So, you know, and clicks and mics. And I mean, there's some pretty authentic lingo in it. But yeah, I think, you know, we want to kind of keep it moving a little bit. But I mean, I think from both of us, this is a good fucking movie. There's just no way around it. This one is a big time recommend from both Vice and I.
Yeah, and last thing, like you said, like William Eubanks is your director. Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't seen Underwater yet, but whatever, he has a real, like, panache. Like, this little moments of a, like, a, it's not just the camera. Like, there's a lot of movies, more movies, you have, like, the gun's eye view, the camera taped to the gun or whatever. There's some of that. There's also some really, like, cool, like, you're there with the character running through the waterfall, and not quite a one take, but, like, a it's unbroken, or it's just flowing, where you see him changing levels from, like, he's running and he has to dive and slide down into water, and the camera, like, kind of, like, shakes it very distinctively to, like, kind of, you see the ash and the water and the flare and the smoke, all the environmental hazards happening to him along with the gunfire and stuff. It's caught really well, really distinctly in the camera. So, you know, the combination of the practical stuff and the really, like, clean effects they do after the fact, it really comes together so well. It really enhances this visceral technical movie, which is really, but has a great sheen of production to it. It's really well done.
Yeah, there's a whole third act sequence that really leans on Eubanks' horror roots. You can absolutely see it. Might as well have been in Underwater, except the color scheme's completely different, because everything in Underwater, as you can imagine, is all blues and stuff, and this movie's all reds and stuff. But it might as well have been out of that. Yeah, really, just advice. I know you're not a huge horror guy, but you really should watch Underwater, if for no other reason. Kick-ass Kristen Stewart's always worth watching. It's got our girl Jessica Henwick in it. It's good stuff. I held off on.
I like Underwater. I was just going to say, and I, as much as I am a, and we're a huge Meg 2 fan, it's hard. Like, the underwater scenes visually in Underwater look much better. I mean, it's a really good looking movie.
Yeah, I held off on watching it for a long time because it had TJ Miller in it. The movie was made long before all the bullshit, all the stuff about TJ Miller came out. It was actually on the shelf for quite a while. But he does die a worthy death in the movie, and so it makes it, but everything else in the movie is just absolutely spectacular. All right, Liam, welcome back, by the way. Your internet has recovered.
Yeah, I was, I actually got a new power box for the house, and but it's still working some bugs out. The breaker went off. So yeah, I'm back, and there's so many little William Eubanks. I forgot that that guy did that Love movie, and that was being produced by one of the Brian Kavanaugh Jones from Skyline, and I remember hearing that he kind of was just doing this whole thing himself. So not surprising to me that he's gone on to be so successful.
Yeah, he's one to, I think he's one to watch. This is two absolute bangers in a row for him. I haven't seen his earlier work, but just based on these two alone, just stone cold bangers. He's definitely one to watch. He is on Twitter. I noticed he liked some of our tweets. So William, I don't know if you're listening, but if you are, kudos, my friend. You've done a bang up job. Can't wait to see what you do next. All right. We want to circle back a little bit to Madam Web. I think we don't want to beat that dead horse anymore. But there is some stuff that has come out around it that I do kind of want to address. And the thing I want to say first and foremost, we talked about the press tour, but I also want to say, like, why y'all got to be mean to Chris Stuckman? What did Chris Stuckman ever do to you? He didn't do anything to you. Like, Chris is, I don't always agree with Chris. He's got some takes that I think are pretty ridiculous, but for years now, he's been a solid YouTube film reviewer, a solid YouTube content creator. He's never really been an asshole. He doesn't show up in people's mentions like other YouTubers do. He doesn't get involved really in YouTube commentary drama and stuff like that. He's just a solid, seems to be at least, I don't know him personally, seems to be a solid dude. And he put out this video this week where he basically said he doesn't really want to talk about Madam Web because it's not a, he doesn't think that it's a fair assessment because of all the studio interference and stuff like that. And he has been getting dogpiled in a way that I think just exemplifies the worst of Twitter. And dogpiled by people who, frankly, aren't as nice and aren't as likable as Chris Stuckman. So, you know, if you're gonna make me decide between Chris Stuckman and Jesse fucking Hawken, that's a no-brainer for me. I know which side I'm lining up on in a heartbeat. Vice, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just saying, just for context, for people who didn't know. So basically, Chris Stuckman does YouTube reviews. And so he did a video recently about Madam Web, but kind of the premise was he wasn't really reviewing the movie itself, more of his kind of analysis of why the studio issue mandates and stuff behind it to result in these bad films. So like he didn't really waste time trying to nitpick point for point the plot problems or the acting problems of Madam Web. He's like this system that they have, the organization, the institution, is what's resulting in these terrible films, and we have to like address how and why that's become to be. So, you know, I think that people are expecting to rag on the film. And I think for me, everybody else is doing that. Like, you don't need one more fucking goon in the peanut gallery to trash this fucking movie. That's not really helpful at all. So I did appreciate his approach to thinking about it systematically of how the studios and how the process, the formulas now work against the films. So yeah, like people like, you know, but they're giving him beef because like he doesn't want to just like a talk shit about the movie like that. You know, it's just like this that's just useless, and like there's no people doing that already. So like I for my part, I appreciate anybody who's willing to do a further dig or even expand the scope of the issues with movies. Now analyze them from that perspective, not just doing the fucking for cinema sins bullshit. You know, it's like it's there's way more to it than that.
Well, and I particularly liked how a lot of people dogpiling on him said they didn't even watch the whole video; they just watched the clip that was posted. Okay, Twitter in a fucking nutshell, right there, right? Yeah, that's my thing. Well, and this comes up for us a lot because, as people know listening to this show, we are in a unique position on this podcast because we have one of our hosts that is legitimately in the industry, actively making films. The other two of us are
finally, thank God.
The other two of us are not in the industry, but somewhat industry adjacent in our social circles, in our friends, people we interact with on social media, guests we've had on the show. Like this is why I've never said, I say sometimes I'm a critic as a shorthand, but I'm not a critic. I've never held myself out to be a critic. I am not paid to be objective about movies in any way, shape or form. And if anybody thinks I'm going to be able to give an objective review to Skyline Warpath, you're listening to the wrong show, man. Like Liam could turn out the biggest piece of shit known to man. He's not going to. And I'm still going to find good things to talk about. I'm going to be like, well, you really nailed this shot here. You know, I've no, done you, that.
There, I already edited a third act fight that wasn't, I shouldn't have edited yet, but I couldn't help myself. And you'll love that. So I already have something for you to love. Don't
Well,
worry.
and that's even, there's some other movies, well, when we had James on talking about Jet Ski, and when I reviewed that back when it came out, that movie is not entirely successful. James directed the hell out of it, though. I mean, it's objectively a well-directed movie. So I don't think there's anything wrong with pointing that out.
Right.
The snark level on some of this stuff is just out of control for me. And it's again, it's There's other film critics I won't YouTube film critics I won't mention them who some who are very very irritating and I get it. Guess what? Just block them and ignore them. Like Chris has never been that. He's never been that guy. There's no reason to do this. I don't know why this bothered me so much this weekend, but it really bugged me. Liam, I know you had some thoughts on it too.
Well, I mean, I've never watched any of his stuff. There's so many different people out there now with, that are so famous and huge that you don't even know exist. But I've seen his stuff in passing. But I know he became a filmmaker. Like, didn't he actually sell a script and directed something? So it kind of makes sense that you, again, going back to that authentic self. And also trying to work within the industry, you have to read between the lines sometimes because people don't want to trash, studios or potential collaborators. So, I mean, it's just everyone being like, you can't really be a critic, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the lines get blurred. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, right? The lines do get blurred. If you are a critic who is also in the industry, which is, when the strikes were going on, it was such a big deal. And I held firm on my belief on that one that if you are holding yourself out as a film critic, you should not be involved in the strikes at all. If you're worried about getting blacklisted by the Writers Guild because you review a movie or do a news piece on a movie that's a struck work, you have to pick a lane. I don't think that's unreasonable. But if you're not, if you are trying to pick a lane and the lane is you want to get into the industry, I understand why you have to hold back a little bit on stuff. I don't think that's, especially if you're upfront about it, which he was very upfront about the type of review he was going to do for Madam Web. I thought it was informative. I thought it was interesting. I don't know. Whatever. It's a rant. I don't know that we need to spend any more time on it other than I saw a lot of really shitty people who've been really shitty for a long time jumping on a dude who has not been shitty, and that always rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, Jesse Hawkins going to point out the MCU is not that good, actually. Fucking groundbreaking content from that fucking hack.
I wonder how else he's going to be able to ride Seedance coattails talking about the military industrial complex in Marvel movies.
Well, he also for all my LA wacky late night Twitter heads, kind of stole a bunch of bits from the wild man Lex G, who called him out and then he blocked him and stuff. So, I mean, the guy's got no integrity. Fuck him.
I miss all this beef. Shit. I'm in a
Yeah.
loop. I miss all the
Yeah.
gossip and shit.
See, this is why we every once in a while we just have to do one of these episodes because when we have guests on, like we couldn't have this
No,
discussion
you can't.
with Chad Michael Collins on. That just the vibes are all wrong for this kind of discussion on that. Speaking.
Chad Michael Collins is the meme of the guy just whistling music. He'd be like, "What are you guys mad about? Life is good."
Speaking of which, Liam and I are actually going to talk about a movie that does kind of cross over into this little weird thing. But first, I want to talk about a one really quick that I watched last night. Our good friend Dan Grima pointed it out. I had seen that it was coming out, but he gave me some information that I wasn't aware of. It's called Air Force One Down. It stars Catherine McNamara, who, for those who don't know, she was in Shadowhunters. She was on Arrow playing Oliver Queen's daughter. It's directed by James Bamford, who was a one of the major directors on the TV series Arrow. And if people have never watched Arrow, one of the best things about Arrow was it had on a CW budget some insanely terrific action scenes, just absolutely some of the best on network television. Air Force One down feels like an extended episode of Arrow, and that is the best compliment that I can give it. It's not groundbreaking. For those who don't know, the plot is basically Catherine McNamara plays a rookie Secret Service agent. She's on her first flight on Air Force One. Terrorists take over Air Force One to try and kidnap the president, played by another CW guy, Ian Bowen, who is a different president than what you'd expect. He's not quite Harrison Ford level kick-ass in Air Force One, but he is a pretty kick-ass president. They escape from Air Force One. They parachute out, and she has to get him to safety. It's a lot of twists and turns and stuff, but what there really is, especially in the third act, there is a prolonged sequence with Catherine McNamara that is a combination of, it's not really a oneer because they don't try and hide the digital cuts anywhere, but what it is very much a modern warfare kind of see, it's not first person, but it has that vibe. The camera's following her almost from a Resident Evil third person over the shoulder perspective as she just flows throughout this entire complex. Half the time she's stalking them, you know, Rambo style. The other half she's doing, I know we hate this comparison, but John Wick style gunfu stuff. It's tremendous. That sequence alone is tremendous. The movie is good. I don't want to oversell it. This is still a DTV movie made for probably $2.5 million. But if you like Arrow, and especially if you like that visual style of the fight scenes in Arrow, you're really going to like this. And Catherine McNamara is 100% a natural born action lead. She needs to be in more action shit. She, you can clearly see she's doing a large part of her own stunts. She did the work. She's really terrific in the movie. Just for her and the action alone, it's really worth watching. It isn't quite like Black Sight a couple years ago where that I felt like that was a real undiscovered gem. This isn't on that level, but this is still the kind of movie that makes me happy when I'm digging through the VOD dregs and I see something like this, and it turns out, you know, I'm always happy when a movie is like this is competent, when it can kick it up a little more and you're getting, like I said, that Arrow level action. I had a smile on my face last night. I cannot lie. So for everybody listening, this is a good old fashioned A4E DTV ass action movie. Everybody feel free to check it out. Dan, thank you for putting the pressure on me to watch this, because yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it. So, all right. Last movie we're going to talk about. Speaking of awkward, I want to say very clearly, you all know Scott Adkins is a very strong friend of people on this show. You all know that Chad Law is one of the best in the business. And we love him. He is a script writing master. And the dude, you know, Liam, you had that tweet about how screenplays it's sales. And when I read that, Chad was the first person I thought about. Motherfucker can sell a movie like nobody's business. It is insane. Sometimes you can't overcome casting in a movie. And that takes us to Lights Out. The new Christian Sesma movie starring Frank Grillo, Mekhi Phifer, Jamie King, Dermot Mulroney, and Scott Adkins. It's fine. The movie's fine. It's fine. I don't want to dwell on it too long because, again, you know, people we like were involved in this, and this is the weird position we're in. But I will say, knowing Scott, knowing Chad, they also don't want us to bullshit and lie about this sort of stuff, right? They're very realistic about the things they make. And Scott in particular, I've already talked to him about this movie. He's very realistic about the movie. So, for those who don't know, plot basically involves Frank Grillo plays a drifter, an ex-soldier drifter who rolls into the city, meets up with Mekhi Phifer, and basically it becomes Lionheart, where Grillo starts fighting in underground fighting tournaments with Mekhi Phifer as his manager. But that runs them afoul of a bunch of dirty cops led by Jamie King. And shit goes south, and for the end, Grillo has to recruit his old army buddy, played by Scott, in essentially the Tommy Lee Jones Rolling Thunder role, and we have a big showdown. I'm not going to be too worried about spoiling fucking Lights Out. I have a feeling this is a movie that if people really wanted to see it, you already have seen it. For me, I thought it was quite a step down from Section 8 last year. If you guys listened, you know I was a big fan of Section 8. I love Ryan Quantin. I thought he really gave his all in that. I thought Scott playing the Terminator basically was just a delight. This one I thought was a bit of a step down, and the only way that I can describe it is because there was a vacuum in the middle of the movie. Grillo just clearly was not invested in this movie. And it shows in every scene, every frame of this movie, it shows. So I don't want to say much more about it than that, but I'll just say the movie gets fixed completely and is much more entertaining if you flip Scott and Grillo's roles. And then you get Grillo coming in the last 15 minutes with a little bit of spice, put a little bit of pepper on the movie. But we have a guy who can actually do the action, is willing to do the fight scenes, and we actually get some pretty good fights that way, as opposed to whatever the fights in this movie can be called. I'm not sure they can barely even be called fights, to be honest with you. Grillo just one punches everybody throughout the whole movie. So anyway, Liam, I know you're in a more precarious position to talk about this movie than I am. So I don't expect you to get into it too much. But
let me think about it. I've obviously talked to Chad and, like you said, Scott, and aware of this movie for a long time. This was shot, I think, in 2021, and it was actually around the time I started corresponding with Chad and talking about projects and stuff. So I've been aware of it for quite a long time. I mean, the interesting thing you said about the action is it doesn't even look like Frank had a double in it. It's kind of like he's just doing the fights, but because it's just him and there isn't a double, it's they're just not long enough. I mean, and then they kind of have the Mortal Kombat X-ray thing. But I feel like that's a little bit more of a band-aid, and it was definitely used better in the Nick Cage Dracula movie last year. I can't remember the name of that one, but it was the fights were good.
Renfield. Renfield.
Yeah. Right.
That's our boy James Newman. That's why the fights were good. That's our boy James Newman.
It's just like the editing of those X-ray things were like just zippier and funnier and kind of like, or I don't know. I just felt like these ones, just even as VFX, were just kind of slow and a little like ploddingly done for, like, we understand what these are. You can be a little faster and zip along with it. But I agree with you that the script is quite good. And it was kind of really cool to see, like, Scott, just, I don't know how much swag and like this dude, he literally, like, kind of, you know, in both Section 8 and this one, it's interesting to see him kind of treated as this, special effect in a different way. You know, it's not so much about the human special effect that we knew him from when he started. But the special, like, almost a charisma special effect to come into these movies.
He's a charisma bomb. It really is, you know, and that's what is funny about him. Again, we're biased. Like, I get that, but
I don't think there's any bias in those two movies. The way that he comes in is like you're saying, it's a bomb. It's like, whoa.
And that's what's so funny about, you know, his earlier career, when even he would admit he was a bit flat, and some people still have that impression of him. But you watch Section 8, you watch this. You watch the way he just drops into these movies, and the entire thing elevates seven notches, because he just dominates the screen every time he's on them, you know, and that's the biggest detriment. The best part of the movie is actually the biggest detriment to the movie, I think, in a way, because it shows you what the movie could have been in terms of if they had done it differently.
I was just going to say, I think you're right, Mike, that people have that impression still, which was, you know, not necessarily ever fair, but, you know, just John Wick 4 alone, be like, oh yeah, this guy's got real fucking chops. And that was sort of, you know, what my thing to him was, is like, yeah, you're kind of, you know, you're an action legend, but, like, I really want to showcase you as an acting legend. And so I really do think he's always had it, because Boyka is, you know, almost 20 years ago, and it was a charisma bomb back then. But I do feel like he's just gotten so much better as an actor and a screen presence. That's something you don't normally see, you know, in anyone. It's like, it's kind of like you either have it or you don't. And he had it right away in certain roles that kind of were really perfect for him. And now it feels like no matter what he's doing, he's got this, he's got the juice. So it's really exciting.
I was going to say, this reminded me of, I'm not a big fan of it. I know people like this in our circle, like the movie Triple Threat, you know, with Ego and the whole crew, and and he comes on as like the main bad guy, arch villain boss guy. That's Atkins I'm talking about. But and you know, the whole idea of the movie is that, you know, you have this, it's jam packed with like action stars, and the thing is, to me, I didn't really enjoy it too much because there weren't. Oh, what's that saying? Who was in it? There wasn't enough fighting, or at least enough good fighting. But then when Atkins is on screen, his best parts are just him like being a dick, like being like a snarky villain, like the part where he says, "Would you find these guys Ninja Island?" Like he just so like he just off the cuff with his like quips like that, and he really sells it. It's like he doesn't even need to like throw a kick to be good on screen. Yeah, so like yeah, it's really impressive. That he can develop, he's developed that as well, as along with his martial arts style. Like he just like this being, this presence in the movies. So yeah, I do hope he does more of that, and you know, and hopefully more fuller projects. You know.
Yeah, and you know, and again, the script hook is it's Lionheart meets Rolling Thunder. And I mean, that's a fucking elevator pitch right there. If people listening to this show haven't seen Rolling Thunder, classic 70s action exploitation movie. William Devane gets his hand stuck in a garbage disposal. They put a hook on it. He sharpens it to a razor point to find the guys in Mexico that killed his family. He finds them. Tommy Lee Jones is his old war buddy. Tommy Lee Jones has the immortal. There's an immortal scene. It's a spoiler for a 45-year-old movie where they're at this dinner and Tommy Lee Jones has had a hard time reacclimating to life after coming back from Vietnam. And so he and William Devane are just sitting there. And William Devane goes, "I found him." And Tommy Lee Jones goes, "What?" He goes, I found the people that killed my boy. And Tommy Lee Jones just looks at him and goes, "Well, let me get my gear." And like goes over to the closet and starts pulling out all these guns and shit. And it's just like that. It's amazing. And that's pretty much what this movie is. So again, Chad, we love you. Script level, no problem here. But it just doesn't come together well. The other thing I do have to say is Jamie King, one of the most beautiful women who have ever graced God's green earth. Just gorgeousness incarnate. I don't know if it was the costume designer. I don't know if it was the director. I don't know who it was, but whatever the fuck wig they put on her is Henry Cavill in Argyle level bad. It like knocked me out of the movie so hard that I can't even describe it.
Fair. It's fair. I guess I won't second everything that you're saying, but I do understand where you're coming from on that one. And yeah. Anyway, I was gonna say something and I censored myself.
Yeah, no, I'll say is, you know what I wish because this comes up a bit with Frank in the movies he's making. You know, and he is not a young man anymore. I mean, it's easy to forget because he hasn't been around that long. He didn't pop until he was in his late 40s, you know, I mean,
correct.
You know, and so he's not a young man. I get that he can't do necessarily the action in something like this that we want to see. That's fine. You know what movie he's great in that involves him not having to move very much and is still incredible? Wheelman. Frank, make like 7 more Wheelman movies. Those movies are perfect for you. He was brilliant in them. You know, it was a great movie. I loved every second of it. And it doesn't involve him having to do a bunch of heavy, you know, physical action. So there is a path forward here, but Lights Out wasn't it. And that's all I'm going to say. We can move on from it.
Fair. All right. Fair.
All right. I think that's it for this week. Anything else we want to throw in, boys?
I do want to say, just because we've been doing a little craft corner, and I felt like Lights Out, like you said, Chad is the king of making producible stories. And I thought, I was even talking to him a little bit, because we're talking on the Discord about, what does that mean? And I've been trying to just kind of impart a little bit of my process, which isn't exactly the same as Chad, because Chad kind of, he, like you said, he comes up with these great elevator pitches that are inherently almost always shootable. And we were talking about what are the first things that you cut from these movies, and how do you really get your arms around these action movies? And I was saying, like, I've written a bunch of movies that are just sort of like, I'm just dreaming it into existence, and none of them have gotten made. So what I was trying to say is that the ones that I'm really targeted about, or in the case of the first Skyline, was written for the location that it was shot in. In the case of Skyline Warpath, I was writing it for the studio that I had shot Beyond Skyline for. And so I literally was halfway done, with the script when I went to scout it earlier this year. And then I walked around the back lot and wrote the second act while I was there. So it kind of, everything falls into place when you are have the ability to work that way. But I'm just trying to say, for like people coming up and when you're trying to learn things, is that, like, that's why I was saying, like, scouting so important, and getting, finding interesting locations, or even finding mundane locations and figuring out how to shoot them in an interesting way. That's all sort of beneficial for what the job eventually is down the line. So, I just was kind of enjoying talking about this, because I think you can kind of tell my brain's a little on fire because of this experience that I had, and I'm just so excited to kind of talk about the different things that I feel like I've learned, because when I feel like I talk to you guys on the Discord or on the show or Twitter, it helps me articulate my own process, because a lot of it sometimes can be mysterious and it's an intuitive. Even with editing right now, we're, like I said, we've done some scenes, we went through reel one, and it's just, you can get scientific about it, but it's generally just like, let me watch it over and over again until I think it's right. And so there's not really like, yeah, there's the sides of the line, and there's different schools of thought on where cut points should be. But, you can take the exact same footage and make such different movies. That's what's been so fascinating for me on this, because, I was talking about the editing process on the Discord. We have an on-set editor who is kind of just, I kind of like to hide him. Like behind Video Village, because I don't think like all actors should see cuts as it's happening. I think someone like Eco, who's very used to video boarding and doing that martial arts, like, it's no problem for him. But I've seen other actors get a little freaked out by it, because it's like there's a certain charge that you get from the chemical kind of experience of like capturing something, and you imagine the best possible version of the edit. So when you see someone just slapping the shots in together without like sound or music, it's like, what is that? So I try to hide them a little bit and just use it as a reference for coverage or continuity. When you're shooting things out of order, oh wait, where, what exactly do they look like? Hair, makeup, blood, ash, all that type of stuff. Very, very useful. But then, we have our other, the stunt editor, who was part of the Awise team, because they did all the action previs, which we call video boards. And then they would be dropping in the shots as we go, right on top of their timeline and looking at the cut points. And in this case, because we already had so many cameras up, we did do the, don't do more than one camera thing. We did do it just because in some cases it was more efficient, where we'd have the gimbal, say we're shooting the over with the action cam on a stylized shot over Eco kicking ass. So we do the gimbal on like a 75 millimeter lens that's just on his face, just so we have, a close-up of him doing it if you need it. generally don't really use it, but I like having it in case there's something like a mistimed block or a missold reaction and you need to tighten something up. It's good to have it. And then the other camera, we'd sometimes do like a slider that would occasionally get like a wide if they'd walk into a certain spot. And so the action team, of course, never uses any of those cameras. The onset editor was kind of like crazy with what all he was using. And so I take all of that information and I like to look at the different ones and kind of make, you know, the version that is using the spine of the action cut, but looking at different places where I feel like you need to open things up a little bit. Or so I actually sometimes will go less cuts than what the action edit was, because they are so concerned about selling every reaction. And I'm kind of like, these two guys are awesome, man. Just let it play. And so it's a fascinating process that I'm like, fucking, like, I can't wait to wake up at 3 a.m. tomorrow to start editing Reel 2. It's so exciting to me. But, you know, just being able to talk to you guys and share it and articulate it is a real, I don't know, it's a real blessing. Because like you said, person in this podcast is currently in the film industry. Since the podcast started, I didn't have a movie. And I was like, when this started, I had a Scott Adkins movie that I wanted to go shoot that was really close to going, which he did eventually get made, Take Cover. And so I felt like part of that from the beginning was like, oh, I'm really excited to kind of share behind the scenes process while making something. And then, of course, it ends up being in Indonesia and I don't get to do the podcast for most of the time that we're filming. So I'm back. And so we'll do this sort of, you know, craft corner, I think, at the end of the week, because, you know, just while it's happening, like I said, my brain is kind of on fire and I'm enjoying everything so much.
Yeah, you're cooking, man. You've been cooking lately. It's been fun. It's been fun having you back in the Discord and stuff like that. You've been cooking.
Well, when you're editing, I'm editing via the internet, which is why my internet's a little actually more stable, even though the crash was a power related thing, because I'm wired in now, because we kept having so many technical difficulties the last week. So I got a long cable, Ethernet cable, and so yeah, it's you're kind of. Occasionally you have to sit there and wait for the editor to put things together and you're just kind of staring at the screen. So the Discord is right there for me.
I guess one other thing we should talk about is, again, it's been announced, but it's announced again going forward. The Orca Punches Shark is on its way. So, you know, You're cooking again. You got
Jordana Brewster again. Yeah. If you guys noticed that I was Fast X's strongest soldier on the show, now you know why. The lines are blurred. I did enjoy that movie more than you guys, but I've been talking to her for a year, so it's been kind of on and off again because of schedules and stuff.
Yeah,
because
so. she was you were talking to her back when Urban was attached, right? It was gonna be her and Urban, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was attached actually before I was. So when I came on, because you know, this there was a whole other version of this with Stephen Quayle and Sam Worthington before I was involved. I mean, I think I first heard about this project in like 2018. So then when I came on, I talked to Jordana and, you know, like I actually met her on the first Skyline cause she came in, to read for it. And so I was like, she of course forgot, but I was like, oh, this is a great full circle moment. Cause I always wanted to work with her. And then, you know, she was the one who even suggested Martin Henderson. So then, you know, obviously Martin and Tegan Croft, who, you know, all you guys know from Titans, which I still haven't seen, but I just got like, you know, sent her information, sent her reels and all that stuff. And I just watched everything. And I was like, she's perfect.
Yeah, she's great in Titans. I mean, again, we, you know, Larnell and I spent a lot of time talking about Titans. That's just all around. I think some of the story choices they make are a little interesting, but the acting is great. And especially as it gets farther on, and they become, this is one of those shows kind of like what you were saying, Vice, where it's like you wait an entire season for, you know, for them to even get, like it takes like a season and a half for Robin to become Nightwing, but still it's still it's pretty cool. And she's great in it. She is she's kind of like the emotional backbone of the show. So I think you're going to have a lot of fun working with her.
We like Zoomed for an hour, and I was so impressed with, you know, especially at that age, just how together she was and how, like, so many intelligent thoughts about the industry and, you know, kind of some of the things we were talking about with the Dakota Johnson to the Frank Grillos and like how to exist as a good person in this industry and like that balance between wanting to be nice and the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. It's a tough industry because you do get taken advantage of if you don't assert yourself. But at the same time, you know, if you're not naturally a dick, it can be hard for those type of people. So it is. It was just such a high level conversation, which I, a lot like Allie on Skyline Warpath. Like, I don't know, I feel much better about the future of artists because the younger collaborators that I've been talking to are so much fucking smarter than I was at that age.
Yeah, and again, I think Henderson's a great cast. I'm pretty stoked for this one. I think this, you know, and again, like I've said, I'm not revealing much, but I have read the script, and for people who, some people on the Discord were like, oh, is it going to be this? And I just need to remind them that your first script had Mars punching the fucking moon. I don't think we really need to worry about Orca punching shark. Like it's so yeah, but all right, well, that was our filmmaking craft corner. I think it's time to wrap it up. So Vice, where can people find you?
You can find me here on the streets in New York City. So here, real quick, I want to give a great big thank you shout out to our friend Andrew Jenner. He's a Crumb for Wins on Twitter and on Discord. He came by New York this past week on some business related stuff. You know, just for, first of all, of course, my fingers for him. Hopefully, you know, he does like he writes movies. He's put together a whole, like, you know, portfolio of scripts, of action movie scripts. You know, he's trying to break his way into the business. So, you know, he has some good business related meetings this past week here in New York City. So since he was here, he hit me up and we met up and he treated me to dinner and it was so nice. I met his wife. You know, they were just the nicest people, of course. So yeah, just big shout out to Andrew. Thank you for having me. And like I said, you know, I'm here, man. Like if you ever come by way of the Big Apple, and you know, you want to shout out, you know, meet up. I'm here, man. You know, find me in the streets. We'll have a good time. So, yeah. No, yeah, which is like a French restaurant in Brooklyn, which is, and it's kind of French restaurant or French cuisine is actually kind of hard to find outside of the city because, you know, it's usually high end stuff. So like most of those high end restaurants in Manhattan. But you know, it was here and it was in Bushwick and it was really good, really, really great stuff. I'm a fat dude, so I love food. So yeah, just again, shout out to him. Thank you for showing up. And like I said, I'm here. You come through the city, just come through, hit me up, man. I'll come out. Nowhere is too far away from me. So yeah, you can find me here in New York, but also on the interwebs. You can find me on Instagram looking hot. So I'll post a picture of us. I'll meet up there. I'm on Letterboxd, so I'll have my review of Madam Web and Land of Bad. On my Letterboxd app, I think this. Oh, but I forgot to say, by the way, Land of Bad, great movie, terrible title.
I disagree. People said that. I think it's a great title. First of all, it reminds me of Jarhead's "Welcome to the Suck" tagline. Yeah. You know, and so I just and especially again, once you see the movie, it kind of makes sense because it just seems to me like, I guess for me, it's not a bad title because Land of Bad is totally, I saw somebody responded to me, a mutual, that said it's just so grammatically incorrect that it bugs them. Land of Bad is something that I would say, like, that is totally a phrase that coin. So it
feels better title than Plane, I'd say.
I do get the thought behind it, like for example, Zero Dark Thirty, the title, that means nobody says that. We say "Old Dark Thirty, Me Army." Like, it's time to get up at Old Dark Thirty. So like the zero just kind of sounds cooler for the movie. Oh, and same thing like here, like nobody, at least when I was in, it's been like fucking what, 10, 15 years now. Nobody said Land of Bed. They said World of Hurt. So I feel like that's what they were trying to go for. Maybe they said this sounded like more marketable. So I conceptually understand what they were going for, but you know, just still like, no, like I guess it's me that do my stupid military nerd thing. We don't really say that.
Yes. You still have to sell a movie, so you still need a good title.
I don't know. World of Hurt. That should be the sequel.
I think World of Hurt. World of Hurt is too common of a phrase, though. I mean, that to me makes it sound like a wrestling movie.
So. Yeah. It Land of Bad at least does feel like a war movie title.
Yeah. It's a very evocative war movie title. Besides that, yes, continue.
Also, you know. I still. Because Land of Bad kind of like land of bad people. And this movie is like, if you got a problem with like fucking military propaganda and like white people going to other countries to shoot people up, don't even go watch fucking Madam Web. Go watch Wonka. Don't even worry about the fucking movie.
Wonka.
You're not mature enough to fucking deal with this stuff. Don't even bother. Anyways.
Especially since it's completely free of jingoism for the most part. It really is not a jingoistic movie.
He's killing brown terrorists. I'm like, hey man, sorry, that's how it be sometimes. Whatever. Anyway, so I'll put my reviews of all those on my letterbox. I like this. And as always, until one of us dies, but not me yet, not me first. Twitter's gonna die first before I die. To get my 10K steps in. I just got 5K steps in earlier before I did the show. Feeling good, feeling great, feel pumped. Yeah, I am on Twitter at Vice Victus, talking all the shit.
Liam, where can people find you?
Instagram, Twitter, but mainly the AFree Discord. And yeah, unfortunately, my 2 weeks of feeling thin after being in production has come to an end, and the belly's starting to grow in from the IPAs and no longer being on my feet for 12 hours a day stressing. So I gotta get my steps in too.
How's been the dart withdrawal?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what a dart is. I don't play darts. I got to say, it's definitely the being back home with the kids and with the pet. You can always kind of tell like how well you're missed by the youngest. And Trent has been just kind of like obsessed with me, and it makes me feel great. So it is good to be back. Very happy.
Nice. Good. Glad to have you back. Glad you're home. All right. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Hibachi Justice. You can find me on all gaming platforms if you want to come game with me. I just got Armored Core Fires of Rubicon. I played it for an hour and it made me twitch and my eyes bleed. So it's going to take me a second to get a handle on that game. But anyway, you can find the show at A4E Podcast, everywhere you look, linktree.com/A4E Podcast. I am doing a 2000 push-up challenge and it fucking sucks, but I'm going to power through and keep doing it. For those who don't know, it's 2000 push-ups in 30 days. Really it's 2000 push-ups in 15 days because every other day you do a plank, you do increasingly long planks. I am in excruciating pain, but I'm going to push through it. I got to get my fat ass off the couch and do something. So, and you're listening to us. So, you know, if you can find us anywhere, A4E podcast can be found. That's it. Love you boys. Let's do it again next week.
Peace.
Thank you.